everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
Now I'm Nick, here again.
And we also have Jay on the line. So, big, supersized, spectacular episode for you. It is the 300th episode of the Comic Source Podcast. It's kind of an arbitrary number, honestly, because when you think about it, okay, 300 episodes. But if you factor in all the Top Cow chronology episodes that we did early on, and then if you factor in some of the two-part episodes or free comic book days that I split up into part one, part two, part three, we hit 300 a long time ago. But that being said, you know, it's our podcast and we do what we want. So we decided that since it's going to be labeled the 300th episode on the website, we wanted to do something special. You know, this is Jay's second time on the podcast. Nick's been coming on, you know, as often as he can. We're trying to produce a lot of content for you this year. You know, since the beginning of the year, we've put out 6 episodes a week. We haven't missed any episodes. I think one episode was slightly delayed. But other than that, we've been able to stick to the schedule, been putting out tons of content for you guys. And we really appreciate that everyone's listening and sharing the podcast and getting excited about the comics and talking about the subjects that we're talking about and interacting on Twitter. It's been a whole heck of a lot of fun. So I want to say thanks to Nick for coming on the show and showing a lot of passion for comics. Thanks to Jay for making time when he can to come on. Thanks to Tim from Hawk World coming on. Thanks to all the creators that I know that have made time from their busy schedules to come on and talk about their projects or join us or take a few minutes to talk to me at shows. We really appreciate all the support. We, you know, I wouldn't be doing this if the listeners weren't there. So, you know, kudos to you listeners. Thanks to you for supporting. Numbers have been steadily climbing since this year has started. Like even to the point of surprising me, which, you know, it's good. It's like when I rededicated myself at the beginning of the year, I was like, okay, if I can get like a certain number of downloads like each episode, I'll be happy. And then I hit that right away. And all of a sudden I was like, well, but let me raise it up. And then I hit that. And now it's like, I'm looking at like double what my last kind of threshold was. So it's great. It's really awesome to have the support of all the listeners. Obviously there's been a lot of changes. There's going to continue to be changes, just trying to bring you more content and, you know, bring more people on and give you more diverse looks at different titles. And, you know, instead of just hearing me talk all the time, having other people come on and share their love and of comics and different perspectives and everything, I think is really great. So we're always looking for people to come on and talk about comics. So if you are a listener, you're interested, you know, be sure and let me know. We may be able to find an episode or, you know, a particular topic that we're going to talk about that you're passionate about and super knowledgeable about. And, you know, we'd love to have you on. So just keep that in mind. So in this supersized episode, it's going to be kind of loosey-goosey, but our supposed topic of choice, I'm sure we'll be delving into other tangents, but our topic of choice for this 300th supersized episode is top 9 artists. Obviously, that could mean a whole heck of a lot of things, and this kind of ties into, and it's going to be sort of a sneak preview for our 9-panel grid going forward. So, you know, 9-panel grid was our first podcast in relationship and in partnership with LRM Online, who now hosts all our content. But what I wanted to do is I think that 9-panel grid name and branding is so great. I didn't just want to abandon it completely, but I didn't want to keep doing 2 different podcasts for the same website because it would get kind of confusing. So we still are going to be doing 9-panel grid. We still are hopefully going to be releasing it on Tuesdays. But what we're going to try to transition the 9-panel grid episodes into is episodes that specifically focus on art and art process. So the hope is going forward every Tuesday to have a different artist guest star on the episode and talk to you about their process, maybe how they broke into the business, maybe some tips on different shortcuts, different techniques, ways you can network, all that kind of good stuff. So that's kind of the what the 9-panel grid is going to be going forward. So I thought it would be really cool to, kind of kick off the art-centric nine-panel grid episodes, even though this is coming out on a Saturday, because, again, we wanted it for our 300th episode. But I thought it would be really cool to do a nine-panel grid 300th episode focused on artists. So we decided to do top nine artists, not top 10, because nine-panel grid, top nine. And so I reached out to the guys. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? Everybody was like super excited. And then we kind of had to figure out, okay, so what does that mean? What does top nine mean? That means like top nine all time, top nine influential artists, top nine personal favorite artists. And we decided to leave it all the way wide open. I didn't want to put any restrictions on it. Because originally I was thinking, okay, I'm going to pick my top nine artists of all time. And then before I knew it, I had like a list of like 12 people, and I hadn't even gotten to like four or five people I knew for sure I wanted on the list. I'm like, that's not going to work for me. I'm not going to be able to do top nine all time. I'm not going to be able to narrow it down. I don't want to omit anyone. I feel bad. So what I decided to do was I decided to look at top nine artists that are working today that – like if they are working on a title or they do a cover or their art appears in a book on the stands, I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to pick it up. So mine is kind of limited to active artists. And again, artists that are working today, who I pay attention to, who I actively seek out their work. So, you know, there could be an argument made for John Byrne as still an active artist. You know, he still puts out some content, but his work no longer makes me go and pick up the book. Like there was a time that if John Byrne was doing a book, I would be buying it based on the fact that John Byrne was doing the art. That's no longer the case. So even though he's still technically active, he didn't make my list. So that's the way I did my top nine. The other guys did theirs differently, and I'll let them explain the way they chose their top nine. Why don't you go first, Nick?
Mine is kind of a combination of favorite all time, some classics, and people I've liked in the last year or two. But I think everyone on my list is still working today, even the classics. I didn't go for any like super classics like Jack Kirby or Starlin or anything like that. So I kept it pretty modern, even though some of these guys have been working for longer than I've been alive. So
how about you, Jay? What was your criteria for the guys that made your list?
Yeah, it was tough because when I first started writing them down, I ended up with like 25. I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to figure this because I've been collecting a long time. Yep. So I just went with the ones that kind of got me into the collecting comics, the ones that I will actually stop to buy covers for, and the couple of ones that are still current that I really like, you know, look forward to the work.
Okay, fair enough. So you kind of went with the same route that I did, had way too big of a list if you were going to pick all your favorites. So just the ones that are a little more current then.
Yeah. And some of them I actually met, you know, so there's like little stories with some of the people I met. So I went with those.
Okay. Oh, cool. I'm anxious to hear some of those stories. Okay. Well, let me kick it off and then we'll just go around the horn. So my first one I'm going to mention, excuse me. And I should say that mine are in no particular order. Like it was hard enough limiting it to nine. Trying to rank them wasn't something I was like, oh, okay, let me do, you know, because it's just too hard. I mean, especially when you like different artists for different reasons, right? It's hard. So maybe I like the rendering or the shading one particular artist does. Maybe I like the storytelling of another. So I was like, I'm just going to put my nine on there and I'm not going to put them in any particular order. That being said, this first guy, he's at the top of my list of people I don't have a sketch from. Well, I don't have like a detailed sketch from. Like Mark Brooks had been at the top of my list, but I finally got him at San Diego Comic-Con a couple years ago. And now this artist is now my, I must get this guy. I have a quick sketch for him from one of his signings he did at the DC booth, but I don't have like a detailed. And it's Lee Bermejo, who started off at Wildstorm back in the day and learned a lot from Jim Lee and a lot of those contemporaries of Jim Lee. Specifically, I'll just mention that for me, his Suiciders run is absolutely spectacular. He did the We Are Robin series, both the covers and wrote the story. He did that Luther and Joker graphic novel with Brian Azzarello a few years ago. He also did another Batman original graphic novel called Batman Noel that's incredible. Deathblow from Wildstorm is where a lot of people will know his work from. He's done a ton of covers. Like, he did all the covers for the Stephen King, The Stand, like Marvel books. He recently did some variant covers for Suicide Squad. When Rebirth started, he was a variant artist on Suicide Squad. There's a really cool variant cover he did where Katana's pulling out her sword and it's like covering her mouth. And you can see a reflection of a smile on the other side of the blade. So it goes where her mouth would. That's really cool. He also did, when they did the Black Bag variants, he did the Harley Quinn on that. So he's done a lot of covers. And most recently, it was announced at WonderCon, or actually a little before WonderCon, that the DC Black Label books that are coming out that are sort of outside of continuity, Lee Bermejo is working with Brian Azzarello again. Those two are teaming up to tell Batman Damned, which I really can't wait. And on top of being a super talented, very visceral, gritty kind of artist whose work tends to be a little more on the photorealistic side, it's absolutely incredible. Lee's like the nicest guy. If you ever are at a convention, definitely go up and talk comics with him. He's so like soft-spoken and intelligent and interesting, and he has a lot of cool ideas. And yeah, he's one of my favorites. Look forward every – he usually goes to San Diego Comic-Con every year, and it's one of the highlights, just hanging out with him and talking comics. So that's my first artist. Who do you have up first, Nick?
I didn't do mine in any particular order either, though I did start with the more well-known people and move on to people whose names I hadn't heard of. Probably you guys have all heard of. So I started with my absolute favorite artist, Tim Sale. Of course, his work on Batman, The Long Halloween, Dark Victory, Haunted Night, and all the Marvel books, which I haven't read, but I want to read Spider-Man Blue, Hulk Gray, Daredevil Yellow, Captain America White. Long Halloween is also my favorite graphic novel writing wise, as well as art wise. It's like my absolute favorite story is The Fall of Harvey Dent. And obviously it's a big basis for The Dark Knight, this book. In fact, I would say it's better than The Dark Knight, but I'm obsessed with the way he draws Batman's ears. Like, I love the long,
yeah.
I even bought a statue from Batman Black and White. It's the only way you can buy a Tim Sale statue that has just the long ears on it. The only reason I like him. He's very it's more of an abstract art style than you generally see in mainstream comics. Almost simple, but even cartoonish in some ways. And like just the way he draws like Joker with the very long face and stuff like that, like really gets me excited. And the most recent thing I've read of his, he did a cover for Batman Rebirth 38. I guess it was a variant, but I got it from the store. So it's The Origin of Bruce Wayne, number 38. I immediately recognized, obviously, his style of Batman right there on the cover.
So you say long ears. So to me, immediately, long ears and Batman, my mind immediately goes to Kelly Jones. Are you familiar with Kelly Jones' work at all?
No.
I'm curious to know what you would think, because people seem to be he's very polarizing. People really seem to really like his Batman or really dislike it. So we'll have to have that conversation at some point.
Yeah.
The other person that Tim Sale's work always reminds me of, who was absolutely incredible, that I'm curious to know if you've seen his work, is the late Darwin Cook. Are you familiar with his work at all?
I'm not familiar with a lot of names I'm not good with names in comics yet.
Right. We'll have to remedy that and see what you think of that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
my brain just holds movie facts. I need to teach her how to hold comic facts.
So yeah, I agree with you. I think Tim Sale is an incredible artist. Do you like, beyond his rendering, is there something about his storytelling style from panel to panel? Like, when I look at an artist, I look at like the overall impact, which, you know, usually is like the rendering, like how they actually draw something. The storytelling, like how does it flow? If it doesn't feel choppy, it feels smooth, you know, telling these sequential stories. And then the third thing, and maybe we should have talked about this before we even started. And the third thing that I look for is, how do they lay out things like within the panel? So what's the camera angle? And is it always straight on, or do they mix it up and keep it interesting for the eye? So are there any of those particular things with Sale that you find? I mean, you already mentioned the rendering. So is there anything about the other two things that you want to kind of comment on?
Well, he seems to be a fan of less panels per page than the average comic. I mean, just looking through Long Halloween, he's a lot of like big splash pages and like pages with only five or even three panels, which is really interesting. It kind of, it gets all the points across. There's never like a jump where you're like, what happened? But just kind of, I don't know. It's very, he has a very cinematic style, I would say, with a lot of the way angles and stuff he draws the art and the way he depicts the characters and poses and stuff.
Yeah, I would say that's probably pretty accurate. All right, Jay, how about you? Who's your first artist you want to mention?
Okay. Hey, thanks for having me on again. I appreciate that. Last time we talked, I said that, you know, Archie Comics got me involved with you know, collecting comic books. So my favorite artist, I think I start off would be Dan DiCarlo. He kind of drew it back in the 50s and the 60s, but he also helped co-create, you know, Sabrina, the Teenage Wish, the Witch, and Josie and the Pussycats. And I did more reading and research. I found out that Cheryl Blossom, the redhead that's supposed to be rich and the bad girl in the comic, was actually named after his wife, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, that is cool.
And I guess, like I said, compared to the artwork, I guess even that time, it's not very, you know, detailed. It's just very simple and plain. But if you see the artwork, you know, hey, that's an Archie comic, or that's got to do something with Archie. So his artwork is very easy to pick out. I mean, he's already passed on, but like I said, it wasn't for Archie getting me there, I guess I would never get into comics.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, totally distinctive style. A very imitated style. I mean, Archie has very much a house style, or they did, not so much anymore since they relaunched, but they very much had a house style. So even when DiCarlo, he wasn't drawing everything, but if you were drawing an Archie comic, you had to draw it in DiCarlo's style, and it worked for the kind of stories they were trying to tell. So yeah, I think.
Oh yeah. Like I said, it's not detailed, but it just stands out. You know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it's totally suits what Archie's supposed to be, right? Like it's bright and it's fun loving. And it's, you know, humor, and it almost reminds you of a, you know, like a Sunday comic strip kind of story. And yeah, that's a great.
Yeah, because every panel is like bright white. None of them are dark, you know, dark colored at all.
Yeah, that's a great pick. And I feel like Dan DiCarlo is one of those artists, based on the amount of work he did, based on how imitated his style is somebody who gets nowhere near the credit that he deserves at all. I mean, people, I see, you know, a lot of people do these top 10 or top 50 all time, and you know his name is not there anywhere near as often as it should be. So that's a great pick. I'm glad you went with him.
Oh yeah.
All right. For my next pick, I'm going to mention Art Germ, Stanley Luau. He's mainly known for cover work. Like he did a lot. He lives in Hong Kong. I want to say that he's from Singapore originally, maybe Thailand. I'm not sure on that, but I know he lives in Hong Kong now, and he kind of got discovered online. He just was, you know, on DeviantArt, was just doing his thing, putting up his art on DeviantArt, got contacted by a few like video game companies to do some work, and then did some prints, and then went to San Diego and did really well. And got contacted to do some limited edition prints for Sideshow Collectibles, some limited edition DC Comics prints. And then they've had statues based on it. And I mean, the guy in the last 5 years has completely blown up. He has a very distinctive style. It's a little bit of a softer style. He works, it's like digitally painted. And he recently was doing the variant covers for Supergirl. And I mean, the numbers went through the roof on this thing. A lot of people don't pay that much attention, right? Until they're standing there a new comic book day looking at the rack and going, oh my God, the Stanley. I mean, like I said, his covers are very, and his style is very easy to recognize. So people are like, oh, Stanley Luau is doing these Supergirl covers. I had no idea. And they immediately sold out. So then people started paying attention. Now Marvel's going to have him do some variant covers. So like I said, he was on Supergirl. He's doing some variant covers for the Mira limited series that's coming on right now. He's got one coming out for Mighty Thor with that whole relaunch or renumbering or whatever the heck Marvel calls it these days. And he also has one other one I saw. I think it's for Spider-Gwen maybe. So he's never done sequential stuff as far as I know. Just mainly covers or prints. At San Diego last year, he had four different sketchbooks, and I was trying to decide. I was going to get one. Maybe I'll get two, because they're not the real large size sketchbooks. They're like 5x7, maybe a little larger than that. So kind of smaller, they're soft cover, you know, and compared to what some people put out, like a Mark Brooks sketchbook was, you know, it's hardbound and it's, you know, nice package, oversized. These were much smaller and they were still like, I want to say $20 each, I think. And I was like, I really, you know, can't decide. And so I ended up, long story short, I ended up getting all four. So like $80 on these things just because I couldn't decide. They were so amazing. So if you haven't seen his work, I really encourage you to go and check it out. And if you do like his work, be sure you're pre-ordering these covers because, man, they sell out really, really quick. I think the last thing that he did, I don't think he had anything come out this last week on the 25th. But I know on the 18th, the Marvel put out the trade paperback for the Return of Jean Grey, Phoenix Resurrection, and he did the cover for the trade paperback of that, which is amazing. I already had all the issues, and I was contemplating getting it. I was like, that cover is so good. Should I pick it up? But it was $20, and I decided against it. I was like, maybe I can just find an image of it online somewhere and put it as my desktop background. So. Anyway, that's my number two. Who do you have up next, Nick?
So most of my picks are going to be people who are still working and whose work I've recognized in the last 7 years, not their work earlier. So next I have, I'm going to butcher most of these names too, because I'm terrible with names, but Greg Capullo? Capello?
Boom, Capullo.
Never heard it say a lot?
Yeah, Capullo, you nailed it.
Yeah, okay. The thing is, you never hear these names said aloud, and so like, shocking.
You would so obviously listen to our podcast.
I will. You're and I'm on it.
Busted right there.
So I believe he did all 52 issues of the new 52 Batman with Scott Snyder. I think he did all 52.
No.
Is that right?
No.
He missed one or two? Or
He missed an arc or two, I think.
An arc or two? Oh,
maybe wow. One. Like he did maybe all one arc. But yeah. Not many. He did not miss many. But he missed.
Yeah, he did a lot.
I think there might have been like a two-part story that he didn't do, kind of in the middle. I could find out, but I don't want to go look right now. But yeah, he did. He did the vast majority of it for sure.
Yeah, a good run of Batman, and he's also doing Metal currently. But I don't know, something about part of it has to do with the first book I picked up was Detective Comics and Batman New 52 issue ones, and I've been reading every issue since. So he's kind of like, for me, the guy who drives, like, I don't like him as much as Tim Sale, but his Batman's the Batman I see the most in my comic reading career. So like, I very much did like the New 52 styles of costumes. It's probably a controversial thing to say, but I like the kind of armored look, and he drew that version of Batman very well. And he continues to draw him well in Metal as well as Superman and everyone else.
What about the Batman bunny suit? Did you like that he designed?
I
forgot about that.
the armor, the Batman armor that Jim Gordon wore at the end, they called it because it had the ear. It looked like
bunny ears. I like the Jim Gordon armor and arc, but the thing that he's made, I don't know. Yeah, he's made such iconic characters through Scott Snyder's writing, like. The Court of Owls mask is just, I have one. It's just fantastic imagery. Also in one of the Court of Owls issues, he has the one where Batman's lost in the maze. And you have to like turn the page all the way around to see Batman spiraling down the maze. And he just does a lot of interesting stuff like that that kind of makes him stand out for me.
Have you read Metal? Dark Knight's Metal?
1 through 5.
Okay.
And you know
his Batman work, obviously. Have you read any of his other stuff? Like, I'm curious if you read any of his early stuff, because, and Jake can probably speak to this. Like, he did Spawn. That was like his big thing that kind of put him on the map.
Yes. I saw that on his page. He did a lot of Spawn and X-Force. Yeah.
But the funny thing, I mean, this guy's been around for a long time. In the late 80s, he was drawing Quasar over at Marvel, and nobody was paying him any attention. And I loved his art back then. I actually prefer his art on Quasar to his Batman stuff, which I know is sacrilege for a lot of Capullo fans, because his art was a little more simple back then. And I think both are great. I have, you know, it's not like I dislike his art now, but I felt like back then he didn't get enough credit. And these days, it's not that he gets too much credit, but I think the reason his profile is so high now is because it was Batman, which is, you know, was the best-selling title for New 52. So I find that interesting. And I would also find it interesting to go back, Nick, and show you some of his early stuff and just to see what your reaction to it would be. What do you think? What do you think, Jay?
I'd love to see some earlier stuff because, I mean, like I said, I'm mostly, with the exception of a lot of trade paperbacks about Batman and Hellblazer and, you know, Civil War and some other stuff, I mostly 2011 on is almost all my single issue reading. So
yeah. So Jay, you knew Capullo long before.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Did you?
But I think his artwork kind of got better over the years, though. I think.
Oh, you think so?
I think some artists. Yeah, I think they get. I think they improve over time.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about. I mean, I think you're right. In as much as he got more detailed, but he probably also got slower. Probably, like most artists, he probably got slower. But I don't know. Maybe I just have a nostalgia for that Quasar series back in the day that got no love. Maybe that's what it is. All right, Jay, who do you have up next?
Well, the second one for me would be Michael Turner. When I saw the Witchblade comic, I was like, okay. Then another one came out and I saw he did the cover. I was like, ooh, that's a pretty awesome cover. So he got me hooked on that. He did Superman and Batman for DC. He also did like a ton of varied covers. I mean, there's too many to mention. But usually if I would see it in the comic shop, I'd buy it because, you know, it was Michael Turner. The funny story before that is when he finally started his own company, Aspen, they had those limited edition cards. You had to buy a box and you were probably guaranteed maybe an autograph by him. And I was desperate. I said, I got to get his autograph. And I think a box was $35. I think I spent $120. I got four or five boxes just to get that autograph. Wow. When I tore them all done, I took them all apart. I got a bunch of sketches and whatnot from different artists. But the card that I did get was number 1 of 50 signed by him. So I got the very first card.
Are you serious?
So that's I treasure that. And after his passing, I was like, man, that's just – it's sad, you know, because he was such a great artist.
Where do you live?
The thing is, I'm in the military, so I move a lot.
See, you guys don't know this, but longtime listeners of the podcast will know that I'm like Michael Turner is my favorite comic artist of all time. He's not on my list again because obviously he's not active, but I'm friends with a lot of those guys over at Aspen Comics, and yeah, Michael Turner, his art is absolutely incredible for many reasons, and a lot of people consider him one of the best of all time. But my daughter's name is Aspen.
Oh, how about that?
And the first time that I met a lot of those guys, like Frank Mastromauro and Peter Steigerwald and JT Kroll and all those guys that were friends with Michael Turner, was at Comic-Con in 2011. And my wife was like 7 months pregnant with our child. And, you know, I went over and introduced myself and I patted my wife's belly. I'm like, yep. And this is Aspen. You'll meet her next year. So yeah, really, really cool. It's one of my biggest regrets in life that I never got a chance to meet him. But like I said, I've talked to a lot of his friends and people in the industry that knew him. You know, he got a start at Top Cow and, you know, I'm good friends with Matt Hawkins, and to a man, everybody says what an incredible talent he was and what a really fun guy he was. So yeah, great, incredible pick. And what do you think it is about his style, Jay, that you said he used to go into the comic store, and if he did a variant cover, obviously it was immediately recognizable by you as him. But what do you think it was about his style or his work that grabbed you and you were like, man, I gotta have this cover?
I just like the way he would detail like the outfit and the women's hair, you know, and their features and their faces. Just, you know, it just stood out. You just knew, hey, that's a Turner cover. I got to get it, you know.
So it was all about the render.
And I've had people that try to get that card from me, by the way. So you're not going to get it because I always tell them I got the number one. They're like, no, you don't. I take a picture. And I go, here it is. Like, oh, my God, you got the number 1 of 50. Yeah. How did you get that? It's like, I spent a lot of money, but I just got very blessed. But I won't give it up.
Well, relative. I mean, you spend a lot of money relative. You could get thousands and thousands of dollars for that card if you wanted to sell it. But if you're as big a fan of Michael Turner as I am, you would never think about
I think if I was ever give it up, I think I would since you know the family, I would say, hey, give it to the family. I wouldn't try to make money off the man.
I wonder, do you have because I do, so I'm curious if you do, do you have a favorite piece of his, one that stands out, or can you not pick just one?
Oh,
not to put you on the spot or anything.
That's tough. Supergirl always sticks in my head. The Supergirl variant he did. Yep. She just looked really so cute. And I was like, man, that's awesome cover. And then I had to pay a little money because even then it was a variant. So you still paid $20-$30. But now it's like, wow, it's worth a couple hundred bucks.
Yep.
I would love to meet him at a Comic-Con, but I never did. So that's kind of – I wish I would have. That would have been cool.
Yeah, same here. For me, my favorite piece of his all time, and San Diego Comic-Con 2011, I saw this original, like his original pencils. They had it there. It was already sold. It had been sold earlier in the show. Not that I could have been able to afford it. I mean, this was 8 years ago, and it still went for $9,000, I think. It was the original pencils for Action Comics 812. It's like this completely iconic cover. It's from the new Krypton storyline that was going on in Action Comics. And it's like new Krypton City in the background. And there's like a profile of Superman also in the background. But then in the foreground, there's this futuristic looking motorcycle. Looks almost like a Tron motorcycle. And Superman's leaning on the motorcycle in his new Krypton armor. And he's just kind of chilling there. Oh, man. Like, I saw those original pencils. And I was debating, like, how far would I get if I just, like, grabbed this and ran? But I didn't really consider it. But it's all – it was like, oh, this is already sold by – you know, yeah, we sold it earlier in the show to a collector in Australia. And I was just out of curiosity how much. Oh, $9,000. Like, oh, my God. What was it? Now that I think about it, was it 9,000? It might have been 13,000. I don't know. It was one of the two. But yeah, absolutely incredible. Obviously, great pick. And I could talk about Michael Turner all night. But
oh yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, definitely. But we need to move on here. So let me go to my number three pick. And I actually already mentioned him earlier. It's Mark Brooks. And here, this just goes to show, you know, that if any one of these artists is currently doing something, I'm paying attention, I'm picking it up. Mark Brooks is currently doing the covers, the main covers actually, for the weekly Avengers No Surrender storyline. And I hadn't bought an Avengers like comic in forever. I couldn't tell you the last time, but I saw Mark say, yeah, I'm going to be doing the covers for Avengers. I'm like, okay, then I'm buying Avengers. And I will read it and talk about it on the show at some point. But again, just a really, really nice guy. Him and his wife, Lisa, are both so accommodating and nice and love to talk comics and meet fans and everything. And every year at San Diego Comic-Con, Mark and I sit down and have a chat. He comes on the show. So yeah, really, really great guy, incredibly talented, has a lot of good advice if you're looking to break into the industry. He's one of those guys that's always full of good advice, and he's kind of come up from nothing and just an incredible artist. A lot of his stuff is self-taught. Like over the last 3 or 4 years, he's started doing a lot of airbrush stuff, and it really shows in his art. And it gives a little bit of a softer feel. In addition to doing the covers on Avengers, which I've been loving, he did the covers on the Nick Spencer Ant-Man series, which were really awesome. There's in particular one I love of Taskmaster, who's kind of a second tier villain, kind of more obscure. And my Mark Brooks piece of art actually is Taskmaster. It's actually one of Mark's favorite characters as well. And Mark did some variants way back in the day when Tron Legacy came out that were in that Tron Legacy style. There were a couple of Spider-Man ones. There was an Avengers one with Moon Knight on the cover, which again, I saw the original art for that, and it went for way above my budget. But it was the exact same thing as Michael Turner. Like, he had it at the show and it was sold already. It went for way more than I could have, you know, paid for it or whatever, but really, really cool. Right. So I said, when I finally get my Mark Brooks, this is what I'm going to want. I'm going to want him to do a Marvel character, but in this like Tron, legacy kind of style. And so a couple of years ago at San Diego, I was lucky enough to get to his table first day, first thing. And I was like, okay, here's what I want. I want Taskmaster, who I know is one of your favorites. He's one of my favorites. But I want it in that Tron Legacy style, like he did those variant covers. He was like, oh, that's a great idea. I can't wait to do it and everything. And so, yeah, it hangs here in my studio. I don't know if you guys can see it back over there. But I'll tilt the camera a little bit. That's not really light enough. You probably can't see it. But I mean, he did such an incredible job. And the blue lines and white lines like of Tron, that part of Taskmaster, it almost looks like it's glowing on the page. It's so amazing. So yeah, he does interiors every once in a while. You know, he used to do interiors back in the day. He's more useful to Marvel, honestly, as a cover artist these days, because he's one of those artists that people pay attention to and they'll pick up the book just because he does the cover. He did return to interiors recently to do the Han Solo Star Wars limited series last year. I think it was 5 issues. And other than that, yeah, mostly covers. He's actually going to be doing some – he's only ever done one DC cover. It was for the Justice League Suicide Squad limited series a couple years ago. And he did a variant for Midtown Comics that was exclusive retailer variant. And he packed everybody he could in there because he's like, I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to do a DC cover again. So if you're going to do one, let me try to do one that has everybody, you know. So all the Justice League, you know, Harley Quinn, Killer Croc, Captain Boomerang, like all those guys. But he actually is going to be doing some DC work again. He's on the Detective Comics variant covers. And I think he starts at the same time as the Brian Edward Hill run. So if you're a fan of Mark Brooks or you want a chance to see Mark Brooks draw Batman, definitely pay attention because that's coming. And then also he did some variants I should mention recently for the New Mutants, the relaunch of that over at Marvel. Who do you have next, Nick?
I have someone you may have heard of, John Romita Jr. Again, most of my references are more recent with all these guys. So the first book I probably saw him on was a trade paperback of Kick-Ass. I have some Avengers trade paperbacks when he worked on Avengers. I read Avengers versus X-Men. For some reason, that one doesn't stick out so much in my head as him doing it. Maybe he only did an issue or two. I also didn't like that book. But he did Captain America Marvel Now 1 through 10, which was the Dimension Z storyline where Captain America was trapped in Zemo's dimension. And he's done so much stuff, but one of my favorite things he's done is All-Star Batman. Probably it's Captain America and All-Star Batman. Scott Snyder's run are probably my favorite things he's done. If you're able to look it up and you're not driving, the cover to number 2 of All-Star Batman is just the most incredible rendering of Two-Face I've ever seen. I would say his characters are even more Tim Sale's Batman is instantly recognizable, but I would see all of John Romita's, like his style is the most instantly recognizable to me, with almost more of his stout characters and the way he kind of shades a little bit with the ink. And I don't know. Again, like just the way he's doing All-Star Batman is very kind of non-conventional when it's introducing new characters and the milestones and stuff. It's again, like Tim Sale, I'd say he's one of the most cinematic, like artists. I don't know. It's such like a, anytime I see a cover by him, I'm like, John Romita Jr. Love it. Doesn't matter what character.
It's so funny that some of these people you're picking, their art style has evolved so much over the years. If I were to show you John Romita Jr.'s first work on Iron Man.
Oh yeah.
And just show it to you and be like, not tell you who it is and go, who is this? You would never. His art, in my opinion, was so much better back then. It's gotten more blockier and stockier as time.
Yeah, stocky is one of the words I was looking for.
And I like just, that. I don't like. I mean, I don't know. To me, his art has gotten worse over the years. But I recognize that some people really enjoy it, and it is very recognizable. And I will say this in John Romita Jr.'s defense. His art on The Silencer, which is his most recent work, I think is the best. It's still in that style, but it's the best work I've seen him do in a really long time. But yeah, it just goes to show that different people, different tastes. Because there's plenty of times on the podcast where Manny and I previously threw John Romita Jr. under the bus for not liking his art at all. So that's great that you think he's awesome and he's
awesome. Yeah, it's me and my fellow comic reading fans. Like, it's one of our favorites. Like, again, like anytime we're like, guess what book John Romita Jr. is working on now? Let's pick it up.
Yeah, he's got a giant following. Some people just love his work. And his work does have a lot of strength to it. it and it's very recognizable. So I could see why I can understand why people like it. It's just not my cup of tea. What do you have? Do you have anything to say about JR there, Jay?
It's different. I mean, people do like it. I mean, yeah, if I see it, I'll appreciate the artwork, but I mean, I won't buy the cover. I'm sorry, but yeah. But you know, I give credit where credit's due. Everybody's got their own style.
Yeah. So you were kind of like me then. You thought his real early stuff is leaps and bounds better than what he does now, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
I agree. All right, who do you have up next, Jay?
Well, I got Tim Seeley.
Ooh, that's an interesting pick.
Yeah, the reason I got to him, I guess, was Hack and Slash, of course. I mean, the girl with the bat and the monster. I mean, come on, you can't go wrong with that, you know? But he also worked on DC with Grayson. He did G.I. Joe versus Transformers and New Exiles, of course. But I met him, I want to say maybe 6 or 7 years ago at Chicago Comic Con. And I just got back from his deployment, so I had all this money to burn because I wanted to go to Comic-Con and get the VIP and be a big spender. Well, I talked to him for like 30 minutes. I was like, hey, can you do me a sketch? He's like, yeah, sure. It would cost, I don't know, $300-$400. Like, hey, do it. Just have her kind of like, you know, with a bat, kind of looking kind of sexy. And he did that for me. So I came back the next day. I think it was Friday. I came back Saturday and I got it from him.
Oh, that's so really cool.
That was pretty cool.
I've met Tim a couple times. He's super, super nice guy. And again, you're making some real, I've loved every one of your picks. No offense, Nick, but Jay's killing you with the picks. I've loved every one of
your picks. I got about 30 years experience. So that's so the big difference there.
I got 7. So,
there you go. Yeah.
No. I mean, there's no wrong answers here, right? But what I loved, I mean, Jay's picks, I mean, Michael Turner, you know, all time favorite, but Dan DiCarlo doesn't get enough credit. Tim Seeley, he doesn't get enough credit. I think he's kind of gotten away from illustration these days. He's more.
I think he writes more now, really.
Yeah, he writes more than he illustrates, but that's not to say that he can't still illustrate and that he doesn't have talent. Cause yeah, guy's super talented. My favorite work of his is that G.I. Joe work.
It was amazing.
Yeah. And I think that. One of the things that's great about Seeley is because he's done so much writing work, he really understands storytelling better than – I mean, I'm not saying that artists out there don't understand sequential storytelling. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is Seeley has an advantage over some of the artists because I think he has a better grasp on storytelling because of the writing also. So some of them struggle with that a little bit, especially starting out. Never seen any of Seeley's work that wasn't incredibly well done as far as the flow of the story from panel to panel.
Oh, yeah, and I love the sketch because he took his time. I told him, like I said, I sat there for 30 minutes. We talked. And he's like, hey, you want a bottle of water? I'm like, sure. So he gave me some water. We sat there and talked and told him about the military, what I did. He's like, oh, that's pretty cool. So I don't know if he gave me a deal or not on the sketch, but it was just perfect. He inked it. It was just amazing.
Yeah, he's
and he was actually the writer on one of my picks that got erased this week when the podcast didn't work out.
Oh, that's right.
He actually wrote Hellblazer 21, which was one of my picks of the week.
Yeah, he's writing Hellblazer right now. That's right. All right, my next pick is scroll back up here. Okay, Brett Booth is my next pick. Now he's not on a particular title right now. I just asked him the other day with New 52. He was on The Flash, and then he took over Aquaman very, very briefly, and then with Rebirth, he was on Titans for a good long time, and then it got announced that he was on Action, but they only actually got a couple of issues done before the Brian Michael Bendis thing, and then with everything getting shifted around, he doesn't have a regular gig right now that he can talk about. There's probably something coming up that hasn't been announced and he just can't say. But for me, what I love about Brett Booth is there is nobody working in comics today, in my opinion, that does page layouts better than him. And by that, I mean the way he arranges the panels on the page. If you go back and look at some of his Flash work, he'll do like these semicircular panels that frame, you know, the image on the top, or he'll do triangles, or he'll do a series of really thin panels. I mean, he's constantly mixing up the panel layouts on the page. It never gets boring. It's very dynamic. I think his rendering and his line work are done very, very well. And I there are people I know personally who can't stand his art. And I'm just like, what is not to like about this guy's art? Like, I completely don't understand somebody who doesn't. And I'm sure there's people out there going, well, I can't understand why you don't like JR. And, you know, whatever. Different strokes for different folks. But for me, Brett Booth, hands down, best panel layouts working in the industry today. Love his rendering. Another guy that loves to talk shop at a show. He doesn't do a lot of shows, but if you're ever at a show that he's at, definitely go and take a look. He also sells his original artwork for like super reasonable prices. I have, I think, 5 Brett Booth pages, I think. Yeah, I have 5 pages, and then I have a Nightwing that he had done just the pencils on, and it wasn't completely finished. It was he took a comic art page and turned it over onto the back and did this Nightwing that's standing there, and it was completely done except one hand wasn't quite finished. It was just rough sketch, and one boot was just rough sketch. And so I bought it and I went to his longtime inking collaborator, Norm Ratman, and I had Norm ink it. And then he finished, you know, the hand and the boot that weren't done. So I've got that giant Nightwing, and then I've got like 5 original pages. I won't tell you what I paid for the Nightwing, but I will tell you that I paid more to have it inked than I did for the pencil Nightwing. But the other 5 pages that I have, I think I have – maybe it's 6 pages. I think it's 6. I think I have – I either have 2 or 3 from Flash, and then I have 3 from Titans. I didn't pay more than $50 for any one of those pages, which is unheard of now. And granted, I got the Titan one a long time ago, but the Flash ones, it wasn't that long ago, a couple years ago. So if you're at a show and he's there, definitely go look through his pages of original art, because he sells them for a lot cheaper than a lot of other people do. And it's just cool to have a, like, you own the original art that is in this book that went out and thousands of people read. You own that piece. It's so cool having an original page like that.
Oh yeah,
so,
it's nice to have a collection.
Yeah, really, really cool. So that's my number 4 pick. Who do you have up next, Nick?
Okay, now I'm gonna start butchering names again. Mikkel Janin.
That's Janin? Pretty close. Yeah, Mikkel Janin. Yep.
Janin. Okay. I actually picked him because of the Batman Rebirth I Am Suicide run, but I did not realize until I looked him up today that he did Justice League Dark's entire run as well.
Which is one of Justice your favorite League, books.
Yeah, one of my favorite books because of John Constantine. But with the Justice League Dark, he's a really good job of, he gets to be very creative with some panels. Like, you know, it's like magic across the panels, like he's showing multiple images kind of swirling across it. But something I'm actually seeing on this page I'm looking at now, and why I picked him on for I Am Suicide Batman, is he draws these wonderful pages that have, like, it's a picture of Arkham, let's say, the interior of Arkham. And then you have the characters really small in the back, and then you have them a little bit closer, then they're closer, all in the same panel. Like, you see them traveling and talking and traveling and talking across the page. And I really noticed that when I read I Am Suicide. The Rebirth Batman, I was a really big fan.
Yeah, you need to check out his work on Grayson, because he used that technique a lot in Grayson, where Grayson would be doing like acrobatic maneuvers, and it would be like kind of like shaded out, and you know, the one closest to you would be like in full color, and the other ones would be a little bit grayed out to show movement. Yeah, incredible artist, great pick. Your best pick so far, in my opinion.
Yes.
But yeah, I haven't actually met Mikkel. He's another one that I really would love to get a sketch from. He lives in Spain, and as far as I know, he hasn't come over to do any shows in the US, but I'll keep my ear to the ground. Maybe he'll show up at Denver one of these days, and you and I can both go check him out, Nick.
Hopefully.
All right, who do you have up next, Jay?
Well, I figure let's add a girl in here. Let's put Jenny Friesian in it. I met her at the Chicago also. It was probably the same time when I met Tim. And she was with her friend. And I was walking by. And, you know, she's like, hi. I'm like, hi. And then I was just looking at her work. And she said the funniest thing. She's like, so you see anything you like? And her friend looks at, oh, that's silly. And I was like, well, there's a couple of things I like. And I kind of winked and they started laughing. So it was nice to break the ice, and we just talked and stuff. She was a really nice lady. Very attractive lady, too. Her husband's lucky. But, her work is, she's done, like, right now she does the covers for Wonder Woman, the variants. She's also done Red Sonja, and she did Vampirella, and then she did Revival also. I guess the reason I like her artwork when I see it is because it looks like a portrait. Like the covers, they're very, you know, it looks like a painting to me. So I just like it. It just stands out. You know, if I see her work, I'll pick it up just because she did the cover. And I go out of my way to make sure I get all the Wonder Woman series with her variant covers. I don't want the regular. I want the variants.
Right. I feel like her, yeah, she's another one that doesn't necessarily get the credit that she deserves. What's interesting about her style is it evokes a softness, but you would never mistake Wonder Woman or Red Sonja as she draws them for being like the weaker set. You know what I mean? Like they're still right. strong characters, but yet she makes them look feminine, but it's not like, you know, super, you know, exploitive where, you know, their boobs are popping out all over the place or anything. It's just,
no, it's classy. That's what I yeah. like. It's very classy.
Yeah, that's covers. A good way to put it. Yeah. Very feminine, very classy. There's still strength there. There's a softness. Yeah, I agree with you. Her work's beautiful. Another great pick. Yeah, I think the first time I actually saw her work was on Red Sonja, those Red Sonja covers when Gail Simone was writing it. Yeah.
Yep, I got all the covers. Yeah. Like I said, I pretty much got all her work. And then like I said, she's really nice to talk to, and she had a couple of sketches and they weren't very expensive. I was like, yeah, I'll take a couple.
Nice. I've never had the pleasure of meeting her. I'll have to rectify.
But she lives in Chicago, so if you definitely go to Chicago, you're definitely going to run to Tim, and you're definitely going to run to Jenny because they're both there in Chicago.
Nice. I do want to get to C2E2 someday. I've heard good things. All right, let's see. Who do I have up next? Oh, well, here's one that you guys probably both have heard of, along with our listeners. Jim Lee actually made my list, right? Like normally I'm not the
– He's a legend.
Yeah, who's that? No, I'm kidding.
He's a legend, but I'm not like the biggest Jim Lee fan. I mean, you have people that are just like, oh my God, Jim Lee's like the best, blah, blah. But, you know, again, based on the fact that the criteria I was using was people whose work I'm buying now, like I'll buy their variant, or, you know, they're like – to borrow a comic term right now, they're moving the needle for me. Jim Lee's moving the needle for me. You know, there's been times in the past where I haven't picked up a title just because he was working on it. Maybe I picked up a title despite the fact that he was working on it. Like I was going to read Superman Unchained by Scott, you know, Superman's story by Scott Snyder, regardless of who the artist was. And I actually think that that's some of Jim Lee's work that's like the worst of his stuff that I've done. I know it's because he was super busy at the time, but it a lot of the panels in that story, especially the later issues after the delays, seemed very unfinished to me. It just wasn't like good quality work. But that being said, the reason I put him on my list now, a big reason is because of his Twitch channel. So if you don't know, Jim Lee has a Twitch channel. He's on it 2-3 times a week where he'll poll his Twitch viewers and say, what do you guys want to see me draw? Or sometimes he needs to work on something for like he was doing the Action Comics story for Action Comics 1000, and he was drawing that. You didn't get to see it all. He would cover some of it up so it wouldn't give away the story. But you got to see him draw that on his Twitch channel. He recently did a show in Lake Cuomo, Italy, the Lake Cuomo Comic-Con, and this show's like they only allowed, I think, 3,000 tickets. So it's more of a small show, like the first 3,000, then that's it. And everybody that went got, you know, special stuff from some of the guests that were there. And so the Jim Lee reward was or anything was a Batman print. And so he comes on the Twitch and he's like, okay, Twitch viewers, I'm going to Lake Cuomo Comic-Con and everybody's going to get a Jim Lee print. And what should I draw? What do you think the, you know, Italian Lake Cuomo Comic-Con attendees would want from me? And everybody's like, oh, you know, shouting out suggestions. And so then he does a poll and everybody votes. Oh, Batman wins. Okay. What should I put in the background? Everybody shouts out some suggestions. He picks 3 or 4 and then puts it to a vote. Ends up being Batman Who Laughs is in the back. And he's riding the Joker dragon, and it's got Challenger's Mountain in the background. You get to see him do it. That one took him quite a while. It was like 4 3-hour sessions of these Twitch feeds videos watching him at work, and he interacts with the fans and jokes around and gives people a bad time. And that's the reason he made my list, for that reason. He's taken this cool platform, Twitch. He's interacting with the fans. He's interacting with other people who are inspired by him and who are trying to become comic artists themselves. When I was a kid, that would have been amazing for me if I could have watched Gil Kane or John Byrne or somebody like that. Sal Buscema, you know, some of my favorite artists back then. If I could have seen them at work, oh my God, I would have been in heaven. And so for the fact that Jim is doing this is why I wanted to put him on my list. Plus, I was picking the Wildstorm title from DC that's coming out right now, the Warren Ellis reimagining of the Wildstorm universe. Jim Lee's doing the variant covers for those. I'm specifically buying the Jim Lee variants. I mean, these are the characters that he created in the Wildstorm universe, you know, like Zealot and Voodoo and all those guys, Imp, and he's the one that's drawing them, Grifter. And so it's cool to see him revisit these characters all these years later. You know, I got to mention his Action Comics 1000 work too. That was great, seeing this new villain he helped create with Brian Michael Bendis, and seeing the Trunks back on Superman. And then, of course, with the DC Metal series, I picked up his variants for that as well. And then I was really excited to see him back on a monthly, Immortal Men. But, you know, in true Jim Lee fashion these days, super busy with 9 kids and doing his Twitch channel and being the co-publisher at DC, he actually didn't even finish one issue. He had a little help from Ryan Benjamin to finish Immortal Man 1, because according to what he said on his Twitch channel, he's got something else that he already had to get moved on to that he couldn't tell us about because it hasn't been announced yet. So it's kind of the nature of the beast. He's I think him and Alex Ross are the two biggest names in comic illustrators right now. So it's kind of hard. I mean, DC is going to leverage that popularity to try to sell more books and boost sales and other stuff. So I don't expect to really see him on a monthly title unless it was like a big event. I wouldn't expect to see him on just a regular monthly book anymore. And because I think in DC's opinion, and this is probably true, his talent and his popularity is kind of wasted on just a regular monthly book. He should be doing something big and something that's at the center of the DC universe. So yeah, Jim Lee, for all those reasons, is my number 5. Who do you have up next, Nick?
I believe it's pronounced Jay Lee.
That's right.
Pretty close to your pick, I guess. Same last name. I noticed him on the new 52 Batman Superman book for the first time. I know I've seen him pop up in a few other places, like Batman Eternal covers. But again, it's like super, like, you notice his art immediately as his art. It's almost Tim Burton-esque, I want to say, with like very like the gnarled trees with all these weird branches and very sharp edges to Batman's cape. And like, just, I don't know, he almost has a certain realism to his characters, but also exaggerated like quality to them. Like even like Wonder Woman, I'm looking at a picture of his Wonder Woman, her hair is like really like specifically pointed and stuff. And it's just, I guess the best way I can describe it is it seems like the Tim Burton of comic book artists.
That's a good, I've never heard his style described that way. It's a perfect way to describe it. And I don't like Tim Burton stuff in general. So that'll probably tell you how I feel about
Jay.
Probably tell you how I feel about Jay Lee.
At first I hated Jay Lee. The first few issues of Batman Superman I read, I was like, this is hideous, but I really grew to like it a lot.
I think his stuff's okay. I really don't. I mean, I'm giving you a bad time. I really don't have an opinion on
him. Not everyone.
I don't have an opinion on him that much one way or the other. I haven't probably read enough of his stuff to really have an educated opinion about it. But I will say this. A big part of the reason I didn't like his work early on was the first time I saw his work was on Namor. And so John Byrne who at the time was one of my favorite artists. And so this was in the late 80s. John Byrne was writing and illustrating Namor. And I loved it. The book was so great. And then Byrne stopped doing the illustrations. He was just writing it. And the person they brought on, who has a completely different style than John Byrne, was Jay Lee. And that I was so disappointed to not have Byrne art in the book anymore. I automatically disliked Jay Lee. So I think I never really gave him a fair shot. And like I said, I don't think that I've really read on a regular basis anything that he's done. So I can't really say, I can't really comment on like his storytelling style or anything. But again, he's another artist that very distinctive style, very recognizable, mm-hmm. and has a pretty big following. And he's a really nice guy too. I've met him a couple times, and yeah, he frequently exhibits in Artist Alley at shows. So if you're a fan, he's got you know, he does sketches, he has prints and everything, and loves to talk comics. So cool. Who do you have up next, Jay?
Oh, I just like his baby series, so you probably know who I'm talking about. Scotty Young.
Scotty Young, yep.
Oh yeah, that's funny because you go to the like new Comic Book Wednesday, you'll see the people fight to get these covers. There's like a few of them, so they're like, man, they're just covers. But people will go, you know, to extremes to get those covers. You know, he did Spider-Man, Legend of the Spider-Clan, New X-Men, New Warriors, and I guess what launched his career, they were saying, was researching, it was Oz the series by Marvel. They said that kind of helped launch his career when he did that, and he got a couple awards for it also. But when he started doing I Hate Fairyland, I was like, yep, buying that. And I love it because it's kind of like the Oz thing, I think, but he kind of makes it – it's just a funny story, you know?
Yeah.
She's supposed to solve the – you know, get out of there, but she never did. She's still there like 4 years later.
Yeah, I'm not – I don't really understand why people go crazy for the Scotty Young cover. I mean, I don't dislike him, but again, it's not my particular cup of tea. But I will say that one – cartoonist that his style kind of reminds me of, and we'll see if you kind of feel the same way, is Bill Watterson, you know, did Calvin and Hobbes, which I love. That's what Scotty Young's stuff kind of reminds me of. And I haven't read I Hate Fairyland, but Manny has, and he's always telling me, you got to check it out. It's so good. It's so good.
Oh, it's great. You got to read it. The storyline is just hilarious.
And so he does.
It's bloody, so it's funny.
He does the covers and the interiors for that, and he writes
it. Right.
And the style that he uses on the interiors, I mean, is it just as clean and polished in the same style as his covers?
Yes.
I definitely should check it out then, just for the art itself.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good pick. Yeah, and I think he's kind of branching out into a little bit more mainstream stuff as far as
– Yeah, that's what I see too. I mean, he still does I Hate Fairyland, but I noticed it was like – the last couple of issues were like, oh, it's delayed, but it was doing other things. I was like, okay, I see what's going on. They're grabbing it for other stuff now.
Yeah, and I think he has some other stuff that he's actually just specifically writing, and he's not necessarily doing
anything. Yeah, I guess that happens to a lot of these guys. They just stop drawing and start writing.
I mean, you get in the industry long enough, you have your own – everybody has their own ideas and everything, and honestly, it's a lot. I mean, we see like guys like Charles Soule, they're writing 3 or 4 books. Because they're able to do that. It's so much faster than the actual illustration takes so much longer. So not that they're doing it for – I'm not saying they're doing it for the money. I'm just saying that they're capable of doing 3 or 4 – writing 3 or 4 books. I don't think anybody could draw 3 or 4 books. Let's see. Who do I have up next? Oh, Gary Frank. So a lot of you are going to know his current work from Doomsday Clock, which has been absolutely incredible. I think it it's recognizable as Gary Frank. It's super clean, super detailed, and yet pays homage to Dave Gibbons and the original Watchmen. Personally, I'm not sure when Frank turned the corner. His stuff got a little too detailed for me. I still love his work. You know, he's still on my list. I'll still pick up something that he illustrates. But for me, much like John Romita Jr., the early stuff is better. So Gary Frank, I first saw his work on Incredible Hulk during that Peter David run. Like I think a lot of longtime comic fans will know Incredible Hulk 377 with like that neon green cover. And I you know, Frank was was it Frank or was it Dale Keown? And that was Dale Keown. Yeah, Frank came on later. But his style was kind of similar to Keown, so it was very much a seamless transition. But his style back then, it didn't have as much detail, especially in the faces. It was just a little more clean. At some point, he just went a little more into detail and putting lines on faces and a little more photorealistic maybe. And again, it's not that I dislike his art now. I just, you know, it's like Now his art's a 9. Back then, to me, it was a 10. You know, it's just slight, just a personal preference for me. But he's just another one that I always pay attention to what he's doing. If he does a cover, if he does a, you know, a run on Action Comics like he did a few years ago with the Lightning Saga, I'm picking it up. Just incredible work. I've only met him once. He was at a San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago. I got a few things autographed. Couldn't afford a sketch from him. They're like $800. But yeah, he's incredible. And Doomsday Clock, I mean, just go and look at it. All you got to do is look at it to know what a modern master Gary Frank is. Who do you have up next there, Nick?
This one I think I'll stump you guys with. I don't think you've ever heard of Alex Ross.
Who?
I mostly know him from cover work. And obviously, I'm that classic DC poster where, you know, it has like everyone and they're all rendered perfectly. So much so that the bad movie, great poster, Justice League poster, mimics his art, the final one, where it has them all laid out in kind of the same way they are on the comic page. And Batman, the others, you can tell they're photographs, but Batman actually looks like he's drawn on the Justice League poster in the style of Alex Ross. But what I've been seeing him in is he's been doing covers for Avengers, I think, until No Surrender. And I think he might still be doing Spider-Man covers, yep. But he's just, sometimes his art creeps me out, like when he draws Superman, because it's too realistic. But I really like the realism he brings to it all. Like right here, I have Amazing Spider-Man number 31, which is Spider-Man getting blown away by a goblin grenade or something. And it's just the detail and like the suit, the piece of the suit flying off. And like it just looks like an image out of 2002 Spider-Man. Like the most photorealistic artist I can think of.
Yeah, his stuff is very photorealistic. He's a guy that moves the needle. That being said, I've never been a big fan of his. I don't really see his art's fine. I don't dislike it, but he's not one like, oh, Alex Ross is doing a cover, I have to get it. I don't know. He's just a painter to me. He's not, I guess I haven't, maybe I don't like his style or his rendering enough to like spend enough time looking at his art to really understand his like storytelling style and his the essence of his art. I mean, he didn't always just do covers or single images like he does now. You know, he did the Marvels series back at Marvel in the 90s that was like revolutionary at the time. And as much as it's an iconic work, it's one of the holes in my reading history. I've actually never read Marvels. I know that's sacrilege in some some corners, but yeah, I mean it's Alex Ross. I mean, that's all you have to say. Guy's like,
yeah,
he has one of the biggest booths at Comic-Con of any of the comic booths.
It's humongous.
Yeah. So
like I said, like I saw that poster years before I was ever reading comics. I was an intern at Weed Road at Warner Brothers, and at the time they had a whole DC slate that never happened, like before the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah. And they had the big poster right above it of all the the classic Alex Ross DC poster, like of all the villains and the heroes and everything. Yeah. And then that whole universe never happened that they had planned out. It became something else.
It's all right. It still exists in your head, Nick, and in your memories. Don't sell yourself short.
It's better in there.
All right, Jay, who do you have up next?
Okay, I'm going to butcher this name. It's Eric Basildua. I always call him E-Bass. It's his username is E-Bass.
Basildua is the way you pronounce his name.
Yeah, that's it. His artwork is awesome. You know, he started with Top Cow, did Tomb Raider covers, The Darkness. Then he kind of went over to Zenscope and did a lot of their covers. And some of them are the rated Z ones, you would say, the nudes.
Yeah, definitely.
His artwork is very detailed with, I guess he focuses more on the female aspect, I guess. But they're very detailed and a little risque, but people buy them like nothing. You know, people are always after those covers. I want to say that I saw him in Chicago, or not Chicago, but New York when I met him. And he's really cool to talk to because some people will charge you for signing some books and all that. But we just sat there and talked. He signed everything that he had a cover on. I did that. I'll sign that too for him. pretty cool guy, but his artwork is, you can always spot it out.
Yeah.
And some of you got to be careful because, you know, you can't have little kids seeing it.
Yeah. I agree. He's got a very polished look and a very recognizable style. And I think he's grown. He's one of those ones you can definitely tell later work from early work too. But unlike Ramita, he's gone the correct direction.
Oh yeah, he always signs in a little weird format when he signs his artwork. I like it.
You feel that jab,
Dick? Always attacking my picks.
All right, let's see. Poking me. Who do I have up next? Oh, okay. This is a really good pick. My next pick is Nicola Scott. So Nicola is one of my favorite people in comics, like of all. She came to comics kind of later as far as being a creator. You know, she read them growing up and everything, but she just kind of decided almost arbitrarily, you know what? I'm just going to try to become a comic artist. I'm just going to stop doing what I'm doing and I'm just going to focus on this. And she got noticed. I think a lot of people maybe first saw her work on Birds of Prey. And she also did some of the Secret Six with Gail Simone. And then in the New 52, she worked on the Earth 2 book. And then I remember specifically, well, first I should say, so I reached out to Nicola. I had met her the previous year at Comic-Con. And then it got announced about 2 months before. And I want to say this was like 2015, I think. And it got announced a few months before San Diego Comic-Con that she was doing a creator-owned book with Greg Rucka called Black Magic. And so I reached out to Nicola. She remembered meeting me the year before, asked her if she wanted to come on the show to talk about Black Magic. She was really excited. And we had this awesome conversation in the little private interview room at the Image booth. And we talked for like 20, 30 minutes. And then the interview was over, and then we sat there and talked for like another 30 or 40 minutes. And she's just awesome. Like, we really kind of bonded and became friends, and she's just amazing, right? And so, you know, I considered her a friend, and I'm at WonderCon the following year, and I knew how much Nicola, you know, loved Wonder Woman, loved the Linda Carter series, and used to watch it when she was growing up and always wanted to work on Wonder Woman. So I'm at WonderCon the following year, and it's the DC panel where they're announcing Rebirth and who's going to be on all the books and everything. And it, you know, it got announced that DC had managed to bring Greg Rucka back, because they'd had a bit of a falling out, but DC had managed to bring Greg Rucka back to work on Wonder Woman, and Liam Sharp was announced as the artist, and we kind of already knew that, right? And then they started talking about how a lot of the titles are going to be going bi-weekly, you know, they're going to come out twice a month. So it's really going to be art teams. You're going to need more than one artist to stay on schedule. And they put up this image on the screen. And as soon as it goes up there, it's a picture of Wonder, it's an illustration of Wonder Woman. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Nicola's art. And so I immediately had to like text her. I'm like, oh my God, you did it. You got your dream gig, right? And she was like so over the moon. I was so happy for her. So she was on Wonder Woman finally with Greg Rucka, who was her, you know, collaborative partner on the Black Magic series that she'd been putting out, that was super, super awesome and crazy detailed, beautiful painted art. And it was like right when the Wonder Woman movie was happening, and she had so much going on in 2016 between the Wonder Woman Rebirth title and the Wonder Woman movie and finally getting her dream project. And I was just so happy and over the moon for her, because she's such an incredible person on top of being a super, super talented artist. And, you know, one of the things that we had talked about when we had that long talk at San Diego was the fact that she really felt like she needed to raise her profile and really get her name out there, because she felt like as a comic illustrator, nobody's really going to do that for you. You know, like DC will promote Jim Lee. DC will promote, you know, a few other super, you know, high profile artists, because it does improve sales on the book. But when you're somebody like Nicola at that time that, you know, wasn't super well known, nobody's going to do that for you. You have to do that yourself. You kind of have to hustle and do the interviews and get your name out there and get people to know your name so you can raise your profile, so you can have the opportunity to do things like Black Magic, so you can be the one that gets the call for Wonder Woman. And that was the reason that the year that I interviewed her about Black Magic was that's what she was actively trying to do. Like, I need to get my name out there, need people to be able to put my face with the name and all that kind of stuff. And kudos to her, man. I mean, she really got it done pretty quick within a couple of years. I think a lot of people know Nicola's name now. And like I said, she's one of my favorite, like, forget about comics, you know, comics people. She's just one of my favorite people. She's absolutely amazing. And I actually got a sketch from her from my daughter at San Diego Comic-Con last year of Wonder Woman. So yeah, she's the best. I love Nicola. So hi, Nicola. I know she listens sometimes. Maybe she'll hear this. So that's what that's pretty my cool. pick. Yeah, she's awesome. Who do you have up next?
Okay. Nick? Well, if you've kind of noticed a trend with my picks, it's since I'm newer to comics, I tend to pick people who do have a distinctive style that stands out. Whereas like all the Jim Lees and stuff kind of look the same to me. I know it's blasphemy, but like, you know, like a perfectly drawn comic book character versus like someone odd, like Romita Jr. is. I notice the ones that are odd. So I'm going to butcher the hell out of this name. Dalibor Talajic?
You got me, man. I'd never even heard of this guy. So I have no idea. I'm Googling him right now so I can see what his art looks like.
I don't know what a Norma looks like because he did, I picked him because of Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe again. So it jumps back and like whenever Deadpool, like the villain's cursed, like, you know, mess with his mind. So he's seeing all the heroes as different things that he needs to slaughter. So like every time he goes in Deadpool vision, it's a completely different art style. Like it could be like 60s Saturday cartoons or it could be like really dark. But I like when it's drawn in reality because it's the only time I've really seen this besides Batman Earth One, but he draws Deadpool with the actual eyes holes, not just like wide eyes, but actual eye holes with the eyes behind it.
It's a good series.
Yeah. And that's why he kind of stands out. It's like, same with like Batman Earth One. I love that idea where it's like, no, their eyes aren't just always white. Like here's a realistic drawing of Deadpool with his wrinkly like face around his eyes looking out from behind the mask.
And so he's, according to Google, he's Croatian. And he did some work on the Red Wolf series that looks pretty good. But yeah, I'm just not really familiar. I
stumped you.
You did. But from what I can see, oh yeah, I see what you're talking about with the eyes. But yeah, from what I can see, he looks, yeah, he has an interesting style. I wouldn't say that his style is super distinctive. But maybe it's just because I haven't seen enough of it. But I wouldn't say it's like super, you know, stylized like Romita or
or Jay Lee. No, I mostly picked him because I noticed the eye effect. And I'm like, that is – you never get to see Spider-Man or Deadpool or Batman like that.
That is
cool to see. Like, yeah, there's a man behind that. It's not just these white, bright eyes.
Yeah, actually, there's a few artists I know from Croatia who are really good. So I'll have to pay attention to his name. Now that you've introduced me to him, who do you
just have? Don't ask me to produce it again. Pronounce it again.
Who do you have up next, Jay?
Okay, well, I like Terry Moore. Some people don't like his work. Some people do. I appreciate his work. Strangers in Paradise was awesome. I'm glad they brought it back. He had Echo, Rachel Rising, and Mortar Girl. Mortar Girl was good because it was a girl from the Iraq War that had PTSD, and she had, you know, everything was in her head. So you don't really find out to the last issue that none of that even happened.
Spoiler.
So it's like, wow, that's pretty amazing. I just like his style of writing, and his girls all look the same except for a little bit of details, but they're all in black and white. And I really do like the black and white artwork without the color. I think it's kind of neat. Like they do with The Walking Dead. I don't think you need color. The covers, sure, cover, you know, they put it in color, but inside interior, you don't need it. Black and white is perfect.
Yeah, I think the thing about Terry Moore's artwork is there's not a lot of I want to say there's not a lot of extras or not a lot of detail because he does put detail, but it's not like super dynamic in your face, right? He's more focused on storytelling rather than like putting in all this super crazy rendering. you know, his stories.
Right. He focused more on the characters in the background. Yeah. You're, really, the panels has always kind of zoomed in on the characters' faces where he details it, but the background, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He focuses on the characters and the just that sequential art and telling a story with, you know, some more like clean, simple art instead of, I mean, you can look at some artists that are, you know, really great. Greg Capullo comes to mind, actually, in metal. Some of those double page spreads, there's so much to look at that you almost lose the story because there's so much there on the page that's fighting for space and for your attention. With Terry Moore's art, it's so clean and simple that that's never the case. It's always a, you know, character and story first. So yeah, definitely appreciate that. I have Rachel Rising and the big hardbound limited edition. I think there were only 500 printed from Terry Moore that I got at San Diego Comic Con a couple of years ago. And I'm only halfway through it. It's one of those things where I start reading it and I get halfway through and then I like something else needs my attention. And then when I go back, right. I'm kind of like, I need to start over from the beginning. I've done that.
Yeah, he's a good storyteller. I guess that's why I like him. And like I said, artwork's awesome, but I guess you really have to pay attention to all the little details. Just there's a story, here's the characters, and you go with it. And like, okay, this is awesome. I can follow this and I like it.
Yeah. He is a modern master for sure. Let's see. Who do I have up next? Kind of cheating, but not really, because these guys all work on the same book. And so they kind of couldn't separate them. So it's Miko Suyan and Louis LaRosa that handle the interiors for Bloodshot Salvation, and Kenneth Rocafort does the covers. So kind of lump them all into one. And they all have kind of a similar style. Rocafort's also doing Sideways for DC, the New Age of Heroes, so I should mention that as well. But Suyan, LaRosa, Rocafort, it's all kind of photorealistic, especially Suyan and LaRosa for the interiors. Their art's very, very similar. A lot of detail, a lot of photorealism, a lot of big splash pages, big panels, a lot of action. And it's one of the most beautiful books to look at that's on the racks today. And Rocafort, again, very dynamic. Very clean style, not quite as clean as the other two, but very fine lines and a lot of detail. And I know several people who Rocafort is their all-time favorite comic artist. So he's got a very distinctive style. And I think he's another one that probably doesn't get quite the attention or credit he deserves because his stuff's absolutely incredible. So. I know that's, like I said, kind of cheating, but I couldn't separate them. I had to lump them all together there. Who do you have up
next? That's 11 picks.
Shh.
It's this show. Let's go
on. That's right. That's right.
Nine.
Turn your microphone off right now.
Another name I might butcher. Michael Gatos. Gatos? Gatos?
Gatos. You got it.
Gatos? Got it. I'm better than I think. I know him from Jessica Jones 1 through 18. I don't have 18 yet, but the Legacy run. Bendis is one of Bendis's last books at Marvel. It's just, I don't know. Bendis writes so much dialogue that he has to kind of work around it in Jessica Jones. And it's kind of fascinating how much dialogue he fits on a panel versus he uses a lot of faces because Jessica Jones is also more dialogue heavy than it is action heavy. But he'll even do like these pages where it's like so many panels that the panels are like some of the panels are bleeding off of the page. Like,
even you can't the panels even see have them. Panels.
Yeah. And at other times he'll reverse to a normal like style, but it's very like his characters are almost simple, not in an insulting way, but like almost the most detail he draws is on like the forehead, like the wrinkles of the eyes and stuff, because it's mostly conversation. I don't know, he just draws a very distinct like Jessica Jones style, like I don't know, this like he does a bunch of double splash pages like back to back and stuff, and they're all detailed and I don't know, just like the way he draws the Purple Man and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and stuff.
Yeah, so when you said
great.
when you said Michael Gatos and then you said Jessica Jones, so I thought that maybe you had read the first
Jessica Jones. No, I haven't read Alias.
Yeah.
I think it was called.
That was, yeah, because that was him.
Did you do
that
one also?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
No, Michael Gatos is the
I figured it was the same team.
Yeah, he's the co-creator of Jessica Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he just change? I thought he changed her from, was she a flying superhero with the costume before, and then he made her more of a private investigator? Or
no.
She tried it, then she got
okay.
I know you've seen the Netflix series, but neither Jay nor I is going to tell you a damn thing about Alias. You got to read it for yourself, son.
Okay. Yeah, don't try to buy number one. It's too expensive.
I thought she had a history before Alias. Is all I was saying.
Like she appeared in comics before Alias.
Yeah, like no. She was more of a superhero character.
No. Her first appearance is in Alias number one. She had, he explored her background and how she got to that point. But no, she hadn't. She hadn't appeared in like Avengers or Daredevil or anything like that. So her first appearance was the Max title, Alias number one, written by Bendis, art by Gatos. So yeah,
good pick. I badly want to read those. So
good pick. I've actually never read or seen any of Gatos's work other than that first Alias series. So I have no.
I'm thinking it's pretty similar.
So what I'm saying is I have no reason to poke you on that one. So.
No, it's pretty good.
Yeah, good pick. Good pick. All right, Jay, who do you have up next?
Let's see. David Baldino, Dion. Am I saying that right? I know it's like hyphenated.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Yeah, I would say Baldion, but I'm not.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I like some of his older stuff, like Dungeons and Dragons. He did that. Marvel Superheroes, Spectacular, Young Allies. He did some Nova. So when he did Domino, I was like, I don't want to get Domino, but I saw that he was going to do the artwork. I was like, oh, I'm going to buy it. And I'm glad I did. I like his artwork. It's just kind of it's not really like a clean drawing, I want to say, but it works. You know, the characters aren't very built, I guess you would say, but they're just like, the way they would actually look in a Saga uniform. So they're in uniform. It's raining. It's not tight on them. It's just kind of on them. And that's why I like it. It's just a fun book. And I'm kind of excited. You know, it's a good series so far. Just hope he sticks with it. Doesn't go anywhere else.
Yeah, I think he's got a pretty traditional style. But he does things that's interesting like that. Like, yeah, a little more realistic. Like the costumes aren't always skin tight. And, somebody gets in a fight. They got a little bit of a bruise on their face. You know, little details he puts in like that show.
Right. He leaves it on there. And it's like, look, a face bruise.
Yeah, exactly. Like craftsmanship. Craftsmanship. That's what it is. Yeah, good pick. Man, see, are you learning something here, Nick? You got to pick. See, get underneath, man. I'm going to give you.
I love that I'm giving Nick the ones you like.
No, it's not that you have to pick stuff I like. You know what it comes down to? Your inexperience is showing.
Oh, but that's okay. Absolutely. I'll admit that. To admit that.
Yeah, that's okay. Because I'm sure 7 years into my comic reading experience when I was 12, I wouldn't have been able to speak intelligently about art either. So we'll give you a pass. Thanks. So when you've been reading comics for, 35 plus years, we'll get back to you and we'll see how what your top 9 artists are there. And maybe
check in.
I'll sell you my Alias number one. Right now it's like $100. It might be about $3 by then.
I'll pick up a trade paperback.
All right, let's see.
I got two copies.
My last pick, my number 9, John Davis Hunt. So,
ooh, nice.
Here's a guy who was discovered in sort of in a way by some lesser known properties. Like the Vertigo corner of DC Universe had hit him as kind of a potential. And when Gail Simone was doing her Clean Room series, they showed her a few different artists that they thought could handle a monthly. And they're like, oh, here's some people we think are talented that haven't really had a lot of exposure yet. And so Gail saw John Davis Hunt's art, really, really liked it, brought him on the book. Book was great. Doing awesome, got some attention, and then they stole him away from her. They stole John Davis Hunt away from Clean Room and Gail Simone and put him on the Wildstorm for Warren Ellis, much more high profile gig. And again, much like Baldione, very much a traditional style, really clean, some detail, but not like overly detailed. Great sense of storytelling from panel to panel. He's one that doesn't necessarily move the camera angles around a lot. But for me, it doesn't bother me that he doesn't, because he's got such a great sense of movement in the panel. He does a lot of foreground, background kind of stuff. And just the flow, his line work, I think all of it works really, really well for me. And it's just a traditional comic style, very, very clean. And he doesn't – it's not really like photorealistic, but it's just – there's something about it that's very pleasing to me. I just love the style. And, you know, part of it's just that series is so great. The story is so entertaining. But I think that he's a name that if he was on like Batman or Superman or something like that, like one of the high or an X-Men title, everybody would know John Davis Hunt, and people would be clamoring for his work. So he's my final pick. All right, Nick, one last chance to not be ridiculed. What do you got?
Now while I'm not too far ahead, Matthew Wilson, who is color artist on Captain America 695 through 700. So that means he does the art and the color, right? There's no penciler or anything on it.
Really?
Yeah, it just says storytellers and color artists, then letterer, then cover.
Wait, who does it have listed as storytellers?
Mark Waid and Chris Samnee.
Chris Samnee's the artist.
Yeah. Okay, they're not like Chris Samnee. It's entirely based on the current run of Captain America Out of Time, 695 through 700 at least. I don't know how much farther he's going after that. It's just, I want to say it has an old school feel to it, but not a comic old school feel. It feels like it was not like it was a comic in the 40s, but it's almost drawn in the style of like the time period of the, I don't know. It has a very like classic feel to it. Not even like an old comic book, but just like a classic art style. With fairly simple drawings, like lots of silhouettes of characters, very kinetic action. They're like, yeah, like Captain America, just the way Captain America, Hulk, and the Thing are all drawn is very like, it's not exaggerated so much, but it's very simplistic yet satisfying. I don't know how else to describe it. I've been enjoying his run on Captain America. Yeah, I love when he does like, there's this great panel from 699 where it's Captain like running through a dorm and it's just door and it's just boom and it's just a silhouette of Captain America with only the whites of his costume are colored. So it's very interesting, like he uses silhouettes a lot, which I like. But
see, I didn't know what to think because I saw you put Matthew Wilson on there and I'm like, yeah, I think he's a colorist. So is Nick gonna kind of flip the script and say, hey, he said artist and technically colorists are artists, so you know, he's going to show us up by taking this avant-garde as his last pick. But then it turns out he's not even picking Matthew Wilson at all. He's picking Chris Samnee. But I can't make fun of him for picking Chris Samnee, who's been one of the most like heralded and award-winning artists of the last, 10 years, 8 years? Ever since, was it Hawkeye he did with Matt Fraction? And then a critically acclaimed run on Daredevil. So, yeah. You redeemed yourself in the end, Nick. That's what I'm telling you. Chris Samnee, incredible sense of storytelling. He's very unique. And I wonder, I mean, it's really easy to continue in that style and branch out in that style and dive deeper into his own style where he does things like you were talking about with the Captain America, just showing the whites and everything else, silhouette. Like once you win a few Eisners, you can kind of do whatever you want, right? You know, he's a great pick. You redeemed yourself in the end. All right, Jay, wrap it up for us. Who do you have for your final pick?
My last one is going to be Frank Chow, or Cho, I should say. Frank Cho.
Yep.
He's very famous for the drawing females. And I didn't know this, but everyone has a double D apparently in his world of female characters. Yeah. I did not know this until I talked to him and asked him. I said, why do they always go double Ds? I'm like, Okay, fair enough. Because I loved Liberty Meadows because it was about an animal sanctuary, and Jen was the main character, and it was like comic strip, you know, panels, but it was entertaining and fun. And I was like, man, I wish this guy would do, you know, something else besides this, you know, something bigger. And he finally did. He did covers like Shayna the She-Devil, then he did Jungle Girl, and then he did Power Girl. He started doing all the variant covers and he started doing interior work. So I like his artwork. And if I see it, I'll pick it up, obviously. And I think most young teenagers will see his artwork and go, oh, I got to get that cover too.
Yeah, he's been doing the variant covers for Harley Quinn.
I get every one of them.
Yeah, so he's fun. He seems to have – I've never met him. He seems to have a real sense of humor because, again, I
– Oh, yeah, he's a funny guy. And he always puts – and you've never noticed in the covers, there's always the dog. Yeah. Somehow, somewhere, you'll see that little dog.
Yeah.
That's just his little tell.
Yeah, so good pick. Well, that's going to wrap it up for our picks, our top nine. Reach out to us and let us know. Reach out to us on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram and tell us what we got wrong. Make fun of Nick for making questionable picks. Make fun of Jay and I for being old school and picking, you know, guys that are not on the cutting edge, like Croatian man who I can't even remember his Dalibor Talajic. Let us know who would make your top nine and why you're picking them. We love to hear from fans. And I don't mention the email often on the show, but you can always email too if that's easier. It's thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. So again, thanks for joining us, everybody. It was a whole lot of fun. Thanks to Nick and Jay for joining. I will say that I did take a couple of peeks at the comic book DB while we were going through here. Capullo missed a lot more than a couple.
He did. I was looking through it too. It seemed pretty consistent.
But he was there for the most part. But there were some Andy Clark, Becky Cloonan issues. There were some Raphael Albuquerque issues. And going through and looking at this, I remembered there were some Jock issues very recently toward the end in the Gordon
the end of the era. Oh, the Gordon stuff.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, for the most part, he was there for I mean, it was what? It was 52 issues. He did well over 40 of them. He did well over 40 of them. So, all right. Well, once again, I want to thank everyone for listening. Don't forget, you can go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes. Damn it, I messed that up. All right. Once again, I want to thank everyone for listening. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social media platforms. All three places are really good spots to find out when we release new episodes and check out all our convention coverage. And as long as you're over at LRM Online, be sure and check out all our other articles and podcasts about pop culture, TVs, movies, video games, all that kind of good stuff. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.